From NPR News in Washington, I'm Carl Castle. Today's New York Times is reporting that the government had intelligence from Yemen before Christmas that the leaders of a branch of al-Qaeda were talking about a Nigerian being prepared for a terrorist attack. The newspaper says the information did not include a name. The CIA says it learned of the suspect in November and passed the information on to the National Counterterrorism Center. And today, the Dutch government says it will immediately begin using full-body scanners on flights to the United States to prevent any future attacks attempts. The White House has told the federal agencies to declassify many more historical documents than they have in the past. That was part of an executive order on classification of national security documents. NPR's Ari Shapiro reports.
Organizations that push for government transparency cheered this new order from the president. Meredith Fuchs is general counsel for the National Security Archives.
He sets a goal that 400 million pages are going to be released to the public within the next 4 years. Currently, the rate of declassification is something like 44 million pages a year. So it would lead to the release of hundreds of thousands, millions of pages of records related to World War II, the Vietnam War, Korean War. I mean, things that historians are really eager to get their hands on.
The order says intelligence agencies can no longer unilaterally veto the declassification of a document. Instead, the final decision on declassification now lies with the president. And the order says government records will not be classified forever. Ari Shapiro, NPR News, Washington.
In Iraq today, two car bombs exploded in downtown Ramadi, killing at least 23 people. Another 57 people were wounded. NPR's Susanna George reports.
The first car bomb exploded in front of the Provincial Council building in a heavily fortified area of Ramadi, the capital of Anbar province in western Iraq. Then, moments later, a second car bomb exploded just down the street. The bombs killed mostly policemen and critically wounded the governor of Anbar, Qasem Muhammad. It is unclear if the attacks were an assassination attempt on the governor. He is a controversial figure due to his longtime partnership with the head of the Anbar Awakening Council, one of the neighborhood-based groups of former insurgents who joined American forces to help provide security. Today's attack comes after a series of assassinations in the province that have targeted tribal leaders, political figures, and security officials. Susanna George, NPR News, Baghdad.
Iranian hardliners are planning a series of state-sponsored demonstrations across the country today in support of Supreme Leader Ayatollah Ali Khamenei. They're hoping the demonstrations will amount to a show of strength against the reformist movement. Tens of thousands of people are expected at today's demonstrations in Tehran and other cities. At least 8 people have died during anti-government protests this week. Top opposition figures have been arrested. It's the worst unrest since the aftermath of the disputed presidential election in June. This is NPR News. After a year of crashes and fatalities in 2008, the emergency medical helicopter industry had fewer accidents in 2009. NPR's Russell Lewis reports.
There are about 750 emergency medical helicopters in the U.S., which ferry accident victims to hospitals and sick patients between medical facilities. The aircraft tend to fly during bad weather and at night. Last year, there were 7 fatal accidents, which killed a total of 29 people. This year, 6 people died in 2 accidents. The reduced fatalities come after federal regulators held a series of public hearings and made recommendations to try to make the lucrative industry safer. Some proposed changes included requiring night vision goggles, autopilots, and extra training. Despite the drop, it doesn't mean the nation's EMS helicopter fleet is safer. The industry's accidents are often cyclical, and some safety advocates want the government to do more, like requiring a second pilot in each cockpit. Russell Lewis, NPR News.
Outback Steakhouse has agreed to settle a sex discrimination lawsuit and pay $19 million to female workers. A consent decree describing the settlement between the Tampa-based restaurant chain and the U.S. Equal Employment Opportunity Commission was filed in Denver federal court yesterday. The EEOC filed a lawsuit against Outback there in 2006, claiming that female workers were denied favorable jobs, which prevented them from advancing to profit-sharing management positions. Outback also agreed to institute an online application system for managerial positions and to hire a human resources executive. Outback did not acknowledge any wrongdoing. The new CEO of the company, Liz Smith, says it does not tolerate any form of discrimination. I'm Carl Castle, NPR News in Washington.